Good morning, and thank you all for joining me on the call. With me today is Jonathan Hill, our new CFO, who started last week. And I hope you'll all have read the announcement release this morning, so I won't go through the results in detail, but I will just highlight a few key things before we open up for questions. Reported Q3 revenues are up 12% on a constant currency basis, or up 8% on a pro forma basis, with FanDuel Fantasy Sports incorporated within the comparative. In our online division, the positive trading momentum we saw in the second quarter accelerated further across both our brands, revenue up 15% in quarter three. The encouraging progress on turning around Paddy Power that we highlighted in August has continued in recent months, with product enhancements and good execution in promotions and marketing, meaning that Paddy Power is now starting to win back market share. I just returned from visiting Australia, where the regulatory and tax headwinds are now coming into effect. And we're using our scale and profitability to invest in further enhancing Sportsbet's leading customer proposition. To target additional market share gains, we are seeking to drive increased customer activity through additional investment in promotional generosity and marketing. And this investment was deliberately focused on quarter three, and this, coupled with adverse sports results during August, meant that Q3 revenues declined year on year. That said, I'm very pleased with Sportsbet's momentum, as evidenced by 25% staking growth and strong customer acquisition and retention. This gives us continued confidence that we're well positioned to win further market share. In the US, Q3 was an exciting period, which saw good momentum in each of our existing businesses and the successful launch of our FanDuel Sportsbook. The start of the NFL season is the key customer acquisition opportunity for fantasy sports each year, and we've been very pleased with our performance this year. Product enhancements, including new game formats and initiatives aimed at recreational players, coupled with good execution in promotions and marketing, have driven good underlying growth in users and revenues. And whilst it's still early days in terms of the development of US sports betting, we are pleased with initial progress. The early indicators in New Jersey highlight both the latent market opportunity and our strong relative positioning. As with our other markets, we know that to achieve online scale in regulating states, we need to offer customers a leading proposition. This is what we've been doing in New Jersey for our FanDuel's market-leading app, with the broadest range of betting markets, competitive pricing, and generous headline promotions. We're also leveraging our existing sports-focused customer base. To date, the customer acquisition trends we've experienced in New Jersey have confirmed to us the value of our fantasy sports player base, both in terms of the players that have been active with FanDuel recently, and perhaps more encouragingly, with respect to dormant customers re-engaging with the brand. Fully capitalising on the US opportunity will require substantial investment in promotions and marketing, and we'll be not shy about investing, but we'll do so in a disciplined manner that focuses on returns generated from spend. Again, the initial indicators in New Jersey are encouraging, with initial acquisition economics indicating good returns on investment. For 2018, this investment means we expect to record an EBITDA loss of around £25 million relating to US sports betting, with £4 million of this incurred in quarter three. As you would expect, we will not be giving guidance on expected investment levels for 2019 at this point. Relevant factors that will determine the scale of investment include how the New Jersey market evolves and the timeline of additional markets legislating, regulating, and ultimately going live. Turning to group profitability, excluding US sports betting, Q3 pro forma EBITDA was up 6% in constant currency after adjusting for US sports betting and tax increases. This was slightly lower than our pro forma revenue growth in the quarter, reflecting adverse sports results in Australia and the deliberate phasing of our marketing spend in online in Australia. The key profitability update we're providing this morning relates to our full-year profit guidance. Notwithstanding adverse sports results in Australia, which persisted in October, our profit guidance has increased marginally, reflecting the good momentum in online. We now expect underlying EBITDA pre-US sports betting to be between $465 million and $480 million for the full year. Finally, following the UK budget on Monday, we now have clarity on the timings and quantum of tax and regulatory headwinds facing the industry in our key markets. On the basis of current revenue levels, we estimate that the full-year impact the 115 million of taxes, clearly very material to our group's profitability over the next 2 years. However, we continue to believe our scale, strong balance sheet, leading brands and market position means we are relatively well positioned to capitalize on the long-term growth opportunities. And Jonathan and I are now happy to take your questions. But breaking the tradition, I'm going to ask the first question. Jonathan, what are your first impressions?
Well, first thing to say is I'm delighted to have joined, and it is a very exciting time to be joining the business. I joined the business for three reasons: the people, the brands, and the prospects. And what I've seen in the first couple of weeks absolutely backs up those three reasons. I've met some fantastic people across the business. I think we can all see the underlying economics of this industry, and particularly what's evolving in the US. Thirdly, the great brands and the scale that we have. And I think what's become even more prevalent obvious to me is the need for podium positions, and the fact that when we have those podium positions, our ability to deal with the headwinds that we see in terms of regulation and taxation are greater. And finally, I think the group is really well placed to take on the challenges that we have ahead of us, and I look forward to meeting, hopefully, everybody on the call in due course.
Thank you, Jonathan. Nigel, we'll now open the lines for the Q&A.
Certainly, Peter. So if you do wish to ask a question at this point, please key star, then one on your telephone. If you then decide to withdraw the question or the question has already been asked, you can simply key star two. So it's just star, then one on your telephone keypad now. Thank you. The first question is from Ed Young from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my questions. I've got four, if you'll indulge me, please. I'll ask them one at a time. First of all, on FY18 guidance, ex-US investment, the midpoint of the guidance is now 472 or so. That implies 155 million of EBITDA for Q4, and they give out a 17% year-on-year increase. That seems quite strong, given the 20% revenue headwind, 20% roughly revenue headwinds from sports results. On normalized margins. So can you help us understand the phasing of that? Is it DFS losses, which are unquantified as now, or is there anything else going on that gives you confidence for that impressive Q4 number?
Well, Ed, we put out the guidance today. We're clearly mindful of the sports results we're seeing in Australia, which have not been helpful, notwithstanding my efforts to try and put some money back into the market when I was visiting. You're right in terms of the DFS losses. They are concentrated in Q3, and we have got strong margin comps to deal with from 2017. But we're confident in the guidance we've given you all today.
Thanks. And my second question was, I was struck by your comment about market share gains for Paddy Power. So how do you define that? You obviously don't break out brand performance, but if I look at what's disclosed by peers, Ladbrokes and Coral grew sort of 23-29% in Q3. Do you mean that sort of level? Because that would imply Betfair's sort of flattish. Or do you mean any sort of average annual market growth? Because obviously the whole quarter for everyone was helped by weaker margin comps. So I'm just trying to understand really what you meant by the market share comment.
There's different ways you can look at it. I mean, we're very pleased with the performance in our European businesses, both with Paddy Power and the Betfair, which both grew in double digits. I think from a Paddy Power perspective, we have seen some good turnaround in the performance of that business, I think particularly around gaming. When we look at the metrics around the business in terms of actives, things like that, we're very confident that business is taking share.
Okay, and then the third question was on Australia. The 8.5% margin is obviously low, and you flagged that sort of 90 basis points of that was from sporting results, which again you said were weak in October. So it suggests sort of 140-ish from the investment you're making, and obviously you've just been out there reinforcing that. Does that mean that we should expect new normal margins in Australia to be sort of 9-ish% or below in the next few years, given the long run average previously has been 10 or 10.5%? Or how should we think about Australian margins potentially over the next year or two?
But we made an additional investment in Generosity in quarter three to take advantage of some of the changes that are happening. You'll be aware that a couple of our competitors rebranded, and we also wanted to reposition ourselves ahead of the important spring racing carnival. We've done that, and we're very pleased with the additional growth we're taking. And clearly, we talked about the margins being adverse in October. At some point, these things do revert back to the mean.
So does that mean we should expect lower levels of investment going forward for the margin, just so I'm clear?
We're not going to be guiding on margins in individual parts of our business.
Okay, and then my final question was just on guidance. So you previously said on the interim call you don't expect to grow profit next year. That's before US investment and before the Irish betting duty. So just mathematically, does that mean we should be expecting EBITDA sort of in and around 425, 427, plus or minus? Obviously, I understand you're not guiding for US sports losses or investment, but sort of that sort of range, plus or minus any change that you do see in investment
losses. We're not giving guidance for next year.
All right. Thanks very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Monique Pollard from Citi. Please go ahead.
Hi. Morning, everyone. Three questions from me, if that's all right. The first one is just on the US. Obviously, you point out, you know, really strong market share gains in New Jersey in September. I'd just be interested to hear how positioning has evolved and competition has changed in October with, you know, a couple more competitors on the App Store and, I guess, marketing budgets being rolled out more broadly.
We're very pleased with the performance of the business in September. I mean, you'll get to see results for our business month on month because the DG will publish them. We shared a snippet on that today because we talked about the amount of staking that we're seeing in our retail shop, you know, up to some $1.5 million a day at the moment. And, you know, we're very proud of that. I think it must be one of the busiest shops in the world. But our online business is bigger. So, you know, I think, you know, the market may well have grown into October. It's a very busy month in the US, but, you know, our business has as well. So I think we're very pleased with our position, and I can't comment on what other people are doing, but, you know, our strategy seems to be working.
Great. And then just on the exchange performance, obviously relative to growth in the third quarter, up 1%. Just interested, I know at the half year, you talked about, you know, the adverse impact that you were seeing from Bet365 and their very aggressively low odds UK horse racing. Has that continued into the third quarter?
I don't think any sort of, you know, reduction in market competitiveness into the third quarter, right? So, you know, we continue to see people like 365 push hard. I think the point there was that we just operate in a very competitive market for customers, and, you know, within our Betfair business, which spans both the exchange and the sports book, and gives us, you know, we're unique in being able to do that. You know, we're fighting for those customers in the same way that, you know, 365 or, you know, someone like William Hill is.
Okay. Yep. Very good. And then just a final question. Have you seen Australia, obviously you said a couple of competitors changing branding, you invested in the third quarter ahead of the busy season. Are you seeing, do you think, particularly increased competitive pressures ahead of the tax increases next year, you know, everyone trying to sort of jostle the position?
Look, we all still, generate positive EBITDA, you know, notwithstanding the very significant levels of points of consumption tax that will come in, you know, from the 1st of January. And clearly, Queensland was introduced at the beginning of October. For some of our smaller competitors, they won't, and so they're desperately trying to get some additional scale to ensure that they can make a profit. And I think, you know, we should therefore expect to see continued levels of very strong competition, you know, up to and into next year.
Okay, wonderful. That's very helpful. Thank you.
And the next question is from Patrick Coffey from Barclays. Please go ahead.
Yeah, morning everyone. Thanks for taking my question. Following on over last, I've got three as well. Ex the World Cup, what was the growth in the exchange, please? And you also say that it grew in line with your expectations. Can you help us out to understand what your expectations were in the quarter? So that's the first one. And then within that, if I can kind of part A and B, second question is just on the margin of the exchange. Obviously, the bare thesis is that it's extremely high. Is there anything you can do to reassure us that the exchange margin isn't materially higher than the group margin? Start with that one.
Do you want to give me a third question as well, Patrick? Or?
Actually, I've got two more because that was A and B. Second question was UK TV advertising. How much do you spend on UK TV advertising at the moment? And then the final question with reference to the commentary around kind of podium positions, just kind of thoughts on your exposure to Italy, and you know, is that a market that you're committed to or that you would consider pulling out of? Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Patrick. Well, yeah, look, on the exchange, I can tell you that, when we look at the performance of the exchange, excluding the World Cup, I mean, there weren't many matches, actually, that happened in quarter three, so it's not particularly material to the exchange, which is of course, driven by, volumes of events. We don't break out the margins, but, I think, hopefully people are beginning to realise that, the Betfair business is in good health, and we do look at it across both the sportsbook and the exchange. We don't try to break it out like that. With regards to UK TV advertising, look, there has been quite a lot of commentary from people about it. I think it was interesting having been in Australia, where I think we were able to operate reasonably effectively with the whistle-to-whistle ban that they have an advertising down there. Yeah, look, I don't really need to wait and see if we can get to sort of consensus on where the UK market can get to. But from my perspective, if there's a reduction, I don't think that would be a bad thing. And we spend about £50 to £60 million on that, as it's important for us. And then with regards to podium positions, we're not very happy about the advertising situation in Italy, where for the moment it looks like advertising's been banned. It was a market where we're operating. We don't have a retail presence there, and so clearly advertising is an important way to get to market. We're assessing what we do in the market. Obviously, we have to stop a lot of our advertising. Fortunately, we do operate through the Betfair business in a significant number of markets around the world, and so we can just redirect our marketing spend elsewhere.
Thank you. And do you mind if I just follow up with one quick one? You say that you're doing 1.5 million stakes per day in October at the Meadowlands. That seems to be quite an acceleration from sort of 1 million or so about a month ago, certainly when I was out there. Is that what's happening? Are we seeing a big step up in October in terms of staking in the retail division there?
Look, it's really difficult for us to understand right now what this seasonality is going to be around the performance of the retail business. October is a big month for sport in the US, and so we would have expected a degree of step up. But I think there's just going to be a sort of maturity of the market, and it's going to take some time before it's fully mature. I mean, we've got some exciting plans what we do with the Meadowlands. And it's as you know, Patrick, from having been there, it's a pretty unique sort of location for us. But actually our business is all about online in America. When we look at the strength of our online performance, which I think we reference was up sort of 40% on top of those very strong results in the Meadowlands, and we'd only expect that to accelerate over time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Gavin Kelleher from Goodbody Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Morning, Peter. Just two for me, please. Just on the exchange, was there any kind of big changes in marketing message around the exchange in Q3 or investment there, or is there any big product enhancements that the exchange show in Q3? And if not, like, what's the pipeline of kind of the exchange improvements looking like in Q4 and into next year?
I've talked to some of you about this. I mean, when we look at our Betfair business, which spans both the exchange and the sportsbook, one of the things that we introduced in Q3 is the ability for people just to toggle backwards and forwards between the exchange and the sportsbook, which is an important way of sort of bringing the products together. And so, if those of you have got the app and have a look at it, you'll see that we started testing that out. There are some other things that, given it's a small scale, where we've been looking at in quarter three. The big thing for us there to support the growth of Betfair internationally is the ability to sort of scale that internationally. So being able to offer a broader range of languages, to be able to have jurisdictional pricing to deal with different tax regimes, to be able to provide sort of content to people in local languages and accept local sort of payment mechanisms, all those things are really important. We'll deploy those together with other to always describe a global scale project over the course of the next 9 to 12 months, and that will help us to grow the business in the future.
Perfect. And just in terms of West Virginia, when do you expect to have your mobile app launched there? And I presume it's kind of a similar model to New Jersey in terms of unrestricted sign-up and everything.
So we are, we're hopeful to be able to launch in West Virginia. I think as we've demonstrated it, with our business in New Jersey, it's important to get a great product out there rather than just rush and, be able to claim success. I think people who just get a product into market just for the sake of it will find that that isn't a good way of acquiring customers. So, we're very thoughtful about the extent to which we allow sort of interoperability between states and things like that. So, we're doing a little bit of work with the regulators at the moment, but we hope we'll be in the market with a great product at some point.
Perfect. Thanks a million, Peter.
Thank you for the question. The next question is from Alex from Investec. Please go ahead.
Morning, guys. I've got quite a few questions. Sorry if I jump around. Just in terms of the U.S.
Let's try and limit them to sort of three or four.
Okay? I'll try to do that, sure. Just in terms of CapEx in relation to the U.S., what additional CapEx should we be assuming for the U.S.? Obviously, we're seeing OpEx increase quite dramatically, certainly above my expectation, and we're not quite sure how that's going to evolve for next year. But how should we think about CapEx?
But we can't give you our view on what we think our losses associated with the US sports betting will be today. I would remind you, we're not a startup in America, right? So, we're having to sort of, fit out offices and stuff like that.
Sure.
But our retail unit, the Netherlands, is, starting to rebuild. If you haven't been to see it, again, have a look at it. There are a lot of people working there. We're going to deploy a whole load of SSBTs and things. So there will be a bit of CapEx, but, we're doing very well. Our acquisition economics are fantastic. We're really pleased with the way we're converting our fantasy customers into sports betting customers. And I think if you look at the market share numbers that we're taking, we're very proud of the business. We're not trying to guide on the difference between OPEX and CAPEX at the moment, but I wouldn't be expecting to massive material.
Okay, that's good news. Thanks. How should we think about the $25 million going forward in that case? Of OpEx?
Look, it's we'll have been running by the end of this year, for a few months. Next year we'll be running for 12 months, but it'll be a mature business next year, right? So the customers who come into the business on the 1st of January will have already paid all the acquisition costs of them, and we'll see the revenues flow through. For all the customers we acquire on the 1st of January, there'll be bonuses and all sorts of other mechanics that they'll be benefiting from together with the marketing costs. So, you just got to work out what you think is the run rate basis of those two different dynamics.
And then the second overlay is the timing of the legislation and the go live in other states, and we clearly don't know that yet. And we'll only know that as we progress into and through next year.
Sure. Thank you. I'll limit it to one more. Just in terms of exchange growth, we keep hearing that competition from Matchbook and Smarkets has increased. We heard about your commission cut on the exchange post the Football World Cup. It looked like you halved commissions for some customers. Exchange growth of 1% obviously includes the Football World Cup element. So, back to sort of Monique's point, how should we think about that evolving going forward? I know you talk about sort of crossing between the exchange and the sportsbook, et cetera, but it's something that's difficult to model just given the competitive nature of the market.
No, Alice, I wouldn't. I don't think it's right to sort of keep going back to Smarkets and Matchbook as the competitors. I think the important thing is to remember that the Betfair business is focused on acquiring what we describe as core bettors. And so the competitors there are any of the other sort of high street or online bookmakers who are focused on the same sort of segments. Clearly, there are some businesses that describe themselves as exchanges that are doing that. The World Cup was not a significant driver of a business for us in quarter three, and we are doing things to sort of look at the performance of that. One of the things that we've been trialing is some changes to the sort of commission structure, but actually part of that is around just bringing together the exchange and the sports book. So look, we're pleased with the performance of Betfair in quarter three.
And I think there's some exciting plans we've got, but it's going to take us time to deliver the international scale work that we need to do to really allow us to grow Betfair on an international basis, as a reference we had earlier.
Sorry, just a follow-up to that. I mean, the Football World Cup was a 5% tailwind to your total net revenue in Q3.
But for the exchange is driven by, from an exchange perspective, which is what you're asking about, the exchange is driven by the number of matches or events, right? And so there weren't actually that many events, whatever it was, there were 14 games, I think, that occurred in quarter three.
Okay, very helpful. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. The next question is from Carl Grant from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi guys, hi Peter, and welcome Jonathan, best of luck in the new role. I also have three questions if I could. The first one is just in the US. So you talked about a significant number of your new customers coming from the kind of daily fantasy sports backbook. Just wondering if you could give us a percentage, instead of just saying significant, what percentage of your customers in New Jersey are coming from the daily fantasy sports, and excluding those customers, what's the sort of average customer acquisition cost of a customer in New Jersey?
We're not going to give a commentary on the acquisition costs of our customers in different markets, but please be reassured that when we compare the expected first year revenues with acquisition costs, we're very happy with the with those unit economics. There are a large number of our customers are coming, as you'd expect. The business is called FanDuel, and we've got a large database of customers in New Jersey are coming from that business, both existing sort of active FanDuel customers, but also some lapsed customers. We're not going to give the breakdowns, but clearly it gives us a real advantage in the market.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, and then second question actually also on FanDuel. Given the recent ruling in New York, are you guys going to have to pull out of New York? And is there any guidance on timing of that? And if you are going to have to pull out, what's the sort of annual EBITDA profit or loss that you guys generate in New York with FanDuel on a daily fantasy sports side?
We're not overly concerned about the ruling that we've seen in New York town. This is an issue which we're not involved in the court case, so we can't necessarily sort of comment on whether there'll be appeals, but I suspect the Attorney General will. We're pretty confident that even if they don't, we'll be able to continue operating our fantasy business in New York. Clearly our fantasy business scales in this sort of way with the sort of population. This is something that's around sort of 10% of our fantasy business in the US. So from a group perspective, even if it were to be stopped, which we I think it will be, it's not material.
Okay, and then going back to Italy, sounds like you guys might have to buy a retail player or exit the market potentially. Just wondering what's at stake. I mean, could you give us a sort of rough idea of the EBITDA generated in the Italian market, please?
Yeah, I mean, we don't give all the specifics of all the different markets we operate in, but Italy is pretty small for us from a revenue perspective, and it's not a significant driver of EBITDA.
Sub £10 million.
So we're not going to give numbers.
Okay, and sorry, if I just get one last one in, just on the £2 maximum stake stuff. Just wondering if you've trialled that in any of your shops at all to see what the impact is and if that lines up with your guidance on the impact.
We've got a very good retail business. If you look at the performance of that compared with any of our competitors, I think we're very proud of it. And so I'm very confident in the numbers I shared with you around what we expect to happen when that change is introduced. We haven't actually trialed it. Our technology for our slot machines is run by a third party, and we can't get them to introduce differential limits for us.
Okay. Thanks very much, guys.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you. The next question comes from Michael Michelle from Davy. Please go ahead.
Yeah, we'll take this last question. I'm conscious of everyone's time.
Okay. Good morning, gents. Thanks for taking the questions. Just a couple on my side then in that case, both actually on online. On the sports book side, I just wonder, could you give a little bit of color in terms of actually what's driving the momentum from a customer perspective? I mean, is this about customer acquisition? Is it about percentage, you know, of existing customer wallet or otherwise? And I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, you know, how sustainable the kind of mid-teens pace of growth is going forward, given, you know, you're coming from a, you know, you're now lapping kind of a period of some share losses over the last couple of years. And then secondly, in a similar vein, just in terms of the sports book margin of 90 basis points year over year, and I think I'm right in saying that the sports results in both the Q3 18 and Q3 17 periods were in line with expectations. So that 90 basis points, is that an improvement in product mix? And again, really just trying to understand how sustainable it is going forward. Thank you.
Yeah, look, thanks, Michael. So, look, let me just tell you, from a sort of margin perspective, you know, I mean, we have seen some positive changes to mix, obviously launched things like the same game multi. We also made some changes to remove some customers, you know, that were sort of bonus abusers and things like that. So, you know, I think we're confident in terms of where we've got to in terms of the sort of margin at the moment. From a sportsbook, you know, core perspective in terms of, you know, how that's sustainable. So, you know, clearly we launched our, you know, customers onto the new product at the beginning of this year. So, you know, compared with this time last year, they're seeing significant improvements. You know, from a Paddy Power perspective, I think the advertising is in a much better place. You know, we are seeing, you know, customers are seeing a product that's much easier to use and much faster. The thing we've got to get right with Paddy Power is the ability to sort of scale that in a way that really makes sense. So, you know, it's obviously very easy to acquire customers that don't make you money, but it's harder to make them the ones who do make you money.
Sure.
I think from a, you know, from a Betfair perspective, I think, you know, we have, you know, we haven't seen as stark a contrast from a sort of product perspective for those customers, but we still have been able to deliver them some improvements, and, you know, we've got further product enhancements to come over the balance of this year.
And sorry, just to preempt my follow-up then, just in terms of the kind of the ongoing improvements on both, across both brands, is it?
Yes. Yeah.
Super. Great. Okay. Thank you.